Om sahana bhavatu sahana bhunaktu saha viryam karavavahai tejasvinavatitamassu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. 1 verse 1 through 2. Ati prasango ma shankyaha, ati prasango ma shankyaha, swakarma vashavartinam, swakarma vashavartinam, astuva kena shakyeta, astuva kena shakyeta, karma varaitum vada, karma varaitum vada. Ati prasangaha ma shankyaha, Swakarma Vasha Vartinam Astu Va Kena Shakyeta Karma Varayitum Vada. Some of you have a slightly different, you have Kotra. This is mine is different, and actually the Kotra doesn't make any sense, so the Kena is better, and my version is reads much much better.
Should we just exit off then?
Just leave it. You don't know what it means anymore.
I might know what it means.
Okay, so X off Kotra and put Kane in there, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm teasing this, okay. In the previous verse, we're really talking about, the previous verse was talking about the Jivanmukta, the one who has nishta, who has clarity in this knowledge. So the verse says, when there is dharadya, when there is clarity, nishta, right? In the vasana, mityatva vasana, in the, Chomji did something interesting with vasana. In use vasana, because vasana is like the samskara, or the subtle impression is another way. You know the word vasana, what it actually means, just in empirical normal speech, vasana means a fragrance. And so they use an example of a vasana. It's like if you had a vase of roses. And so you have the beautiful rose scent that's being emitted by the roses. When you take the vase away, the scent remains. So even though the object that's responsible for the scent is no longer there, the scent remains. So it's like a subtle impression in terms of scent. So vasana is the subtle impression that remains even after the event has passed. And so sometimes Swamiji's made the distinction between vasana and samskara. He actually doesn't use the word vasana. He doesn't like to use the word vasana. He will use the word samskara. And with samskara, he means past impressions from previous lives. But impression is the same thing. It's like the event has happened, and your emotional response to the event, in terms of raga dvesha, you know, that raga dvesha will remain, so that when a situation happens again that has some similarity to the prior event, that will trigger the emotion that accompanied that event. That's what we call vasana, a subtle impression. So these subtle impressions are triggered by current events, even though the impression is something that happened a long time ago. And so these words vasana and samskara, so vasana is often used more for just what is going on in this life. The subtle, often translated, talked about as subtle raga dvesha. Ragas are your desires, your passions, the things that you want, the things that you have what we call a pravritti for. Pravritti means an inclination to go after them. The dveshas, dvesha means hatred, the dislike. So we say your likes and dislikes. So the dveshas, you have a nivritti. The dvesha, something that you dislike, is there, you want to pull away from it. So these raga dveshas, these subtle impressions of your likes and dislikes, are called vasana. So now in this section, it's mityatva vasana, daughter J. When one has clarity, right, they have nishta, strength, they're firm, in that vasana, the mityatva vasana. Mityatva vasana means my orientation, the vasana here, so he's using here the word orientation for vasana, which is really, really nice. My orientation toward the world, my orientation toward raga dvesha, different likes and dislikes that are taking place in the world, or these responses, are all viewed as mitya, that mityatva buddhi is there. In other words, when the mityatva buddhi, for the mityatva buddhi to be there, buddhi means that knowledge. You know, the seeing, the cognition, the understanding is the buddhi. So the understanding of the of all of this being of the nature of mitya. For to be of the nature of mitya, all that we experience, one has to know what the adhishtana is. Adhishtana, we mean that which is the truth of the mitya, that because of which there can be mitya. Without the adhishtana, without the locus, without the substratum, there can't be mitya. Without the rope, there can't be a snake. Without the clay, there can't be a pot. So it is the thing that is actually there, that the truth of what is there. That's the adhishtana, the thing because of which the mitya can be, right? They pull the adhishtana clay away, there is no pot. They pull the rope away, the adhishtana rope, there is no snake. So the adhishtana is what is the truth? What is actually satyam? What is actually there? And the mitya is what is as though superimposed upon it. Superimposed in the sense that it's the entirety of its reality, its being, is the adhishtana. Like the entire reality of the pot without anything left over. We have ashesha. Nothing left over at all. Is clay. In fact, there is nothing else there. There's only clay there. Even though the pot has usefulness. Really, there's only clay there. That's what we mean by adhishtana. That's what is actually there. Rope snake? There is nothing there but rope. The snake is mitya. It has no being at all. Right? And so, now here, in reference for the jnani, for the one who has self-knowledge, this universe is mitya. The body, mind, sense organs are mitya. My perception is mitya. The objects of my perception, mitya. Right? That means, if I say in Sanskrit, the pramata, I'm the pramata, the one who knows. What the knower, the enjoyer. The body, mind, sense organs, the knower, the enjoyer, all of this, mitya. Mitya of what is the adhishtana? Me, the conscious being. Like the clay is the adhishtana of the pot, I am the adhishtana. I am the truth of the knower, of the sense organs, of the body. I am the truth of the act of knowing. And I am, that's the pramana. And I am the truth of the prameya, everything that I know. So I am both the subject and the object, and everything in between. Right? That's the nature of consciousness. So for the jnani, the entire creation and everything within it, which means the whole subject-object duality, all of this is mitya. So, and that mityatva buddhi means I see this, I recognize it as mitya, and if I'm recognizing it as mitya, I must also be recognizing the satyam. Right? You can't recognize something as mitya without recognizing the truth of it. So I see myself, for one who has dharja, this nishta, you see yourself as the constant being, the wholeness, the satchit ananda, the fullness. That is the truth of both subject and object. So it's a big thing that he's talking about here. He says, for such a person who recognizes that, then those jnanis, aklishyantaha, without any without any pain, without any strife or agitation, pravartante, they engage in life, how? Swasva karma anusadatah, simply in accordance with their own prarabdha karma. Each will say, each one of us is a jnani, we each have jnana nishtha. Then what are we each doing? What do? Well, we act out in life, we engage in life. According to what? What's the driving force? The prarabdha karma. The driving force of your life is your life. The driving force of your life is the unfoldment of the prarabdha karma, right? Which is the very karma that caused you to take this birth. So the jnani actually relaxes into the prarabdha karma, and what is meant to be done is right there in front of you to do. And there's a certain relaxation that takes place in that, with that buddhi. There's a certain relaxation because no matter where you are or what you are feeling or what you are thinking, you are somewhere with something to do. No matter what, as long as you're alive, you are somewhere with something to do. Right? And so, in fact, life is always surrounding you. Right? Life is always giving you something to respond to. And so for a jnani, looks at that, what life is giving me to respond to engage in, that is, in fact, what I'm doing. I'm not looking to become someone else. And I'm not looking to live somebody else's life. The reason I'm not looking to become somebody else or to live somebody else's life, because, you know, Joe Blow over here has it better than I do, why I'm not looking to live somebody's life is because I'm not superimposing the wholeness or the ananda, which is my own swarupa, which is my own nature. I'm not superimposing that on the world. Rather, I'm recognizing that wholeness as the adhishtana, right? As the actual truth, the actual being, my own being as the actual being of this creation. So my mind isn't wandering out trying to become full, you know, from the names and forms, when I'm the very substance of all of the names and forms. So I'm not engaging in them in order to become happy. So he says, for such a person, for the person who's a jnani, prarabdha kshaya kanchaya, what their intent on in terms of living is simply the exhaustion of the prarabdha karma. By exhaustion, that means the experience of the prarabdha karma, the life as it's been given to me, to my life. Because we look at this life from a Vedantic standpoint, that as the prarabdha karma, your life, the major thread of your life is in the process of fructifying from birth to death. Right? So the broad strokes of your life are, we would say, ordained. That's the prarabdha karma. And it will unfold one situation after another situation after another situation and another situation. With that, in that unfoldment, you have some free will. It's limited free will. You know, because to have total free will, that would be as though you could decide. You had total control over the life that unfolds for you. But I don't think anybody, you know, people have their doubts about that. Right? I think that as we kind of analyze our life, you see there's kind of a mix between your destiny, your lot in life, you know, like forget his name. Brady or somebody, he said, you know, the fellow who was with Ronald Reagan when he was shot. Jim Brady. Yeah. Well, somebody asked him quite some time after, because he was quite disabled by that.
Brain injury.
So it was, you know, it was very disabling. They were talking to him about it, and he said, well, you know, I'm just playing out the hand I've been dealt. Playing out the hand I've been dealt. But we're all playing out the hand we've been dealt. And so from a Vedantic standpoint, we look at that hand we've been dealt that goes from birth to death as our prarabdha karma. And within that karma, there's some free will. So what does the jnani do? There, since the prarabdha karma is there, there's a certain relaxation. You can count on your life being there, right? So you can relax into your life and engage in your life, but you're not any longer seeking your life as to make you happy, as though your life is your source of happiness. The life is not the source of happiness. The source of happiness is the Atma, right? Because that is where the Ananda is. The Ananda doesn't exist in the Mithya. The Ananda is the very your own Swarupa. So the mind that knows this rests in the fullness of the self, and from that position, mind from that position, then engages in the life that is mine, that is given to me, that's part of my prarabdha. This prarabdha is part of the whole picture. You know, like I use the example, of course we all use the example, of the dream or of an imagination where you're the individual that you are in that imagination is part of a bigger story. It's part of a bigger picture, right? And so your prarabdha really is playing out in reference to everybody else's prarabdha, right? You're part of a bigger picture. And so say you recognize that your life is part of a bigger story, then you relax into that story and do your best within it, right? You respond to your life within that story rather than wishing you had somebody else's story, right? That's another problem. Say you wish that you were somebody else in this story, you know? One thing, if you think there's only one life, that this birth is it, you are born, you have this one shot, and then you die. You know? Even for, I'm sorry, just for samsari. That is such a terrible pressure. You know, because then so-and-so gets to do this, and so-and-so gets to do this, and I'm stuck with this. But, you know, in the East, not just in the Vedanta, I mean in the East, because 67 people in the world accept, just as part of their culture, as part of their upbringing, this transmigration, birth after birth after birth. So many people are born into that type of a containment. For them, this life is one of many. This is what I'm doing this time. Next time I'll do something else. And how many things have I done before? But this is my lot this time. So that takes off a lot of pressure. But even in terms of my desires, I realize I can only do so much in one life. I'll have to take care of the other things later. Yeah. But so let me accomplish these things in this life. Or if I'm not able, say I'm working to become a great tennis player, and I realize that I'm not going to make it in this life. It's not going to happen. You know, I can say, well, next life. I've done all of this work this life. Maybe I can pick that up next life. So you have all of these kind of, you know, things that kind of give you some sort of relaxation. But that's just in samsara. But for a jnani, even that is not not important. It's not important because the ananda, which is the reason that I do all of these things, the ananda, the wholeness, the fullness, has nothing to do with any of these things. The ananda, the wholeness that I seek in the creation is actually my own being. And so for the jnani, the mind that has discovered that doesn't do this circuitous route of trying to fulfill a desire so that my mind can relax for a moment so I get a little bleep of ananda. Rather, the mind rests in its own swarupa and enjoys that fullness, which that fullness itself is changeless, it's timeless, it's wholeness. So the mind rests in that swarupa, and in not asking the creation to make me happy, when I'm not asking that, as we'll see in these verses that are coming, when I'm not asking that, then the mind can accept what is. If I'm not asking the world to make me happy, then I become somebody who's just engaged in the world as it is. I'm responding objectively to the world because I don't require you or you or you or the situation to get to give me my wholeness. And so how am I going to respond to the world then? Well, I'm going to respond to this life as my life, and I do the best that I can in it. In terms of dharma, or what is the most helpful, what is the most appropriate way of being? Kaushalam, what is the appropriate way to be? Because I'm not asking it to make me happy. That's why Swamiji says that life unfolds event after event, and I do my very best. I just do it the best that I can. And for him, you know, he's got stacks of things to do and hundreds of people to see, and he just does as much as he can, wanting to help. Therefore, they say for Agnoni, if you're not needing to become whole, then you try to do your best in the situation that you're in for whatever's being asked of you. Therefore, you're being whole. It's natural to love and to help, and because there's nothing else going on to stop that. The human being is basically ananda. At your core, you're Brahman. At the core of every human being is Brahman. Right? So Brahman is ananda, is wholeness, is completeness. That's who you are. And so when the mind is acting out in a different way, it's just lost out there in samsara. It's not that Brahman or that your being has become tainted, you know, or hurt, but your mind is suffering from ajnana and acting out, trying to make some happiness for yourself. Ajnani isn't doing that, right? Because if the nishta is there, this is mitya, I am satyam. The wholeness is not here. I am the wholeness and the mind's source of ananda. Right? I am ananda, and I am the source of any experiences of joy or bliss or calmness or peace on the part of the mind. I'm the very self of all of that. And so the jnani resting in that just lives out the light, no problem. So now, this verse that we're on says, somebody might have doubt. What if that jnani, that Jivan Mukta, I don't know, they're acting a little inappropriately. Eti prasanga means, oh, I don't know, they're in a given situation, they're, why are they even in that situation? What's going on with that person? Why are they behaving in that way? Why are they doing this? Eti prasanga has the sense of inappropriate behavior or inappropriate action or excessive action of some sort. So he says, Eti prasangaha ma shankyaha. Don't doubt. Don't let this, don't doubt this eti prasanga. Don't think that there's eti prasanga. Inappropriate behavior. Swakarma vasha vartinam. For a person, for those who are simply existing within their own karma. It says, swakarma, one's own karma. Vasha means under the spell of one's own karma. Vasha means under the control of one's own karma. They are vartim. They are situated within one's own karma, the prarabdha karma. So now the prarabdha karma is acting out, and you're in the middle, is taking place, and you're in the middle of that prarabdha karma. Okay? So he says, ati prasangaha ma shankyaha. Don't think there's excessive behavior for one who is simply within abiding within their own karma. And he says, astuva, or let there be excessive behavior, or let it be that. Let there be excessive behavior, let that be. Then he says, kena shakyeta karma varayitum. He says, by whom can karma be warded off? By whom can karma be prevented? Who can prevent this? Who can prevent the prarabdha karma from taking place? So that's what he says. So let it be. Let the person, like being, say for instance, the person is. They're not talking about a dharma here, so don't, it's not that. Because a dharma, you have a choice, right? So why would you choose to do a dharma, right? But say you're in. Say you're born. A very, very wealthy, well-to-do, or the type of people that you have around you are people that don't, you know, are the wealthy elite, and certainly far from being maybe somebody, people who are living a spiritual life, or the person, the life that is surrounding that person is not something that you would want to say, well, that person's a Jivan Mukta. Because when you think that person's a Jivan Mukta, they should be living in the Himalayas, right? They should be in their little hut in the Himalayas and teaching a few students and just wearing the orange and living a very aesthetic life. Right? This person is Eti Prasangaha. Their life is excessive. They're going in all the kinds of different directions. So you say, how could this person who's living this lavish life, or, you know, they're getting involved in so many different things. Their behavior, they're excessive. The things they're doing, they're involved in so many different things. You know, that doesn't seem appropriate to me. So he says, no, you can't judge. Because a person is going to find themselves in the middle of their prarabdha karma, whatever it is. Like, what if a person, they're living a householder's life, and they have child after child after child, and they're just totally involved in samsara, as children will make you. They will drag you into samsara. There's no, just the nature of the beast. That's how it is. They will take you deeply, deeply into samsara. And so, here you are. Here you are as a jnani, as a Jivan Mukta, sitting in the middle of this, you know, in the middle of this type of a thing. Somebody can look and say, no jnani would live like this. No jnani would put themselves in the middle of this type of samsara. Or Janaka, who is a great king. All of this, this is not a simple life. You know? This is a life of excess. You know? And Swamiji teaches this verse, he'll say something like, look at me. He won't say look at me, but he'll talk about himself. Because talk about, you know, Ati Prasanga. Is nobody could be more more engaged in piles upon piles upon piles and piles of things. So he'll take that Ati Prasanga as being just excess, way too much. Way too much is going on. And you would say, you can't be a jnani. Because if you are a jnani, you wouldn't live like that. If you were a jnani, you would be up in the mountains. Right? You would be up in the mountains in an ashram, living a contemplative life, like Shankara maybe, except Shankara went all over the India. But there's pictures of Shankara up in the Himalayas, sitting on his deerskin, you know, teaching his four disciples. And it looks so heavenly, you know. So say you have this idea that this is the life for a jnani. No. You will be, jnani or ajnani, you will be there right in the middle of your karma, whatever that may be. And so he says, and if the life seems excessive, if it is excessive, you know, let it be. First he says, don't judge this person, as don't say it's Ati Prasanga. Then he says, even if it is, let it be. Because, so what? Because then he says, who has the power to change their prarabdha? In other words, you can't pluck yourself out of your prarabdha and put yourself somewhere else. So he says, who's got that power to move outside of their karma? Then he says, Vada, tell me that. And so that also, I find that is so interesting. If you look, just in simple ways, you can kind of understand the power of the prarabdha karma. You can have an idea, you know, like, you know, I think I want to quit this job and get another job. I don't think I want to do this anymore. It's time to change jobs. That's a major thing, right? To change jobs is a major thing. So you think that. I'm tired of this job. It's boring me. It's too much work. I'm not that interested in it. I think I'll stop. What happens? Usually nothing. It's just you think about it. And you think about it and you think about it. But there's no pravritti inside. There's nothing inside that will push you to do that. Until the time is right. And then, when the time is right, you will change jobs whether you think about it or not. It's time. It's the same. Say you want to think, I don't know, I don't think I want to live in Berkeley. I think I'd like to move to the city. You can think that, and think that, and think that, and think that. Want that, imagine about it. Nothing will happen until it's time. On the other hand, it can go the opposite, you know. You cannot be thinking about it, it's time to move, you move. It's the same with relationships. People seek for a relationship, seek for a relationship, seek for a relationship, want a relationship, nothing happens. At some moment, everything conspires and it happens. You know? What I'm saying is it's your sankalpa, the individual sankalpa, sometimes is in harmony with the prarabdha, with the karma. Sankalpa means the desire. Sometimes it's in harmony with the prarabdha, in which case you thought it and it's happening. And other times it's not in harmony with the prarabdha, so the sankalpa is sitting inside of you and the prarabdha is continuing. So it's very kind of interesting. That's why for a jnani, these sankalpas which are not in harmony with the prarabdha very rarely occur, because what's occurring for the jnani is the prarabdha. Why? Because I'm not wanting to be the world to make me happy. I don't want to be like the Joneses. I don't want this particular thing to happen or this particular happen if it's outside of the sphere of what is happening. What is happening is my prarabdha. So because of that, they say for the jnani, really, the vision, this gets a little bit esoteric, but it is there in the Mundaka Upanishad. You know, in India, for the Jivan Mukta, for the one who is viewed as a jnani, who has nishtha, the people will always go to their guru, their guru who they view as a mahatma, you know, and ask for things. Ask for, you know, that my child get well and all these type of things. Seek their blessings. Because of this understanding that the mind of the Jivan Mukta is in harmony with Ishwara. It's not, the Jivatvam is really not operating. Because I don't want this or I don't want this, what is here is fine. What Ishwara is fine. And so, if because of that, kind of accepting that traditionally, if you can get the jnani, your guru, to have a positive vritti, then that vritti is coming from Ishwara. Right? Because why would that vritti come? Right? So if the vritti comes, it's Ishwara's vritti. And so that vritti is considered a great blessing. Right? So if the teacher says, you go to the teacher and says, you know, Swamiji, I'm worried about such and such and such and such, and can you please help me? You know? And then so you go to the teacher and you ask for that, and then the teacher says, oh, no, you'll get that, you'll be fine. And then you'll become so happy. Because if the teacher will say that, like for Swamiji, for instance, who I consider has a very, you know, Ishwara Buddhi like that, he won't say it. It won't just come like that. He won't say. If he says it, that means that's the vritti that's come for him. And that's what he feels. That's what it is. If that vritti doesn't come, that would answer the person's prayer, what they want, then he would simply say, let's wait and see. Well, pray for it. Let's wait and see. But if the vritti comes, it's, oh, be fine. But I'm just trying to tell you what all of that is based on, because, I mean, what's kind of the philosophy behind it? It's because the mind for the jnani is not asking. It's not out there trying to gain happiness from the world or to make Ishwara be in a way that Ishwara isn't. Rather, it's recognized that mityatva buddhi is there. This body, mind, sense organs is part of it. This whole thing is my prarabdha. This whole thing is Ishwara. And so the buddhi, the buddhi is in harmony with Ishvara because not superimposing jivatvam, not superimposing ajnanam or my own, what we call jiva srishti, on top of Ishvara srishti. Ishvara srishti means the creation of Ishvara's creation. That's Brahman, right? This manifest knowledge, srishti means creation. This manifest knowledge is Ishvara srishti. It's the creation as it is. Jiva srishti, because we have free will and ajnanam, the jiva srishti, the jiva's creation, is what we project upon Ishvara srishti. Right? And so that Ishvara, as we gain knowledge, we're rolling in, you know, slowly rolling in this Ishvara, this jiva srishti, so that we're not superimposing all of this ajnanam, all of this ignorance onto Ishvara. So that means we're living in Ishvara's creation and not trying to make it be other than what it is. We're responding to Ishvara and find ourselves as part of Ishvara. That's the mittatva buddhi. And so, now, for the jnani, for the jivan mukta, who's got that mittatva buddhi, then also that jnani is considered a great blessing. The drishti of the jnani is a great blessing to the world. Because the jivatva is not there, right? That projection is not there. And so that means the jnani is not in any way asking you to be different in order for you to be acceptable to them. See what I mean? In other words, I don't need that for I don't need you to be in a particular way in order for me to be pleased, in order for me to be full or complete. That gives a tremendous freedom. And so often when you're with a jnani, you feel loved because you are. But you're not loved because you've done something. You're loved because the swarupa, that's the ananda swarupa of the self. And so that's the unconditional love. If you're loved because you've done something, then you have to keep doing something, and you might do something wrong. Right? So that's a conditional love. But if you're not loved because you're doing something, but you're loved because that's the very swarupa of the person, then you come into the contact of that wholeness, and that wholeness is not going to be something that changes on you. Right? So that's why the jnani or the jivan mukta, the person who's mature in their knowledge, is such a pleasure to be with. They're a pleasure to be with because when you're with them, you feel like you're cared for and that you're important. And Swamiji's always my role model for this, because when you're with somebody like this, then it's not that they're the important one. It's not how you feel. You feel, you know, you feel that you're important. You know, that they care about you. And what is the thing about it is that that's true. They do. They care about you and what's happening with you and how you are and all of that. That's what their drishti is, their concern. So it's a very, very beautiful thing. So he's here, Vidyaranya is trying to is talking more and more now just about the nature of the jivan mukta, because we're moving in now to the second line of this verse, the first verse of this chapter 7. If you remember, these 350 verses, right, are on one verse.
Yeah.
We have now completed. He's now completed the first line of that verse in this 130 verses. He's now moving to the second line, this next verse. He's moving to the second line, and he's working up to this now. The second line is on the jivan mukta. And so that's what's kind of nice. Actually, it's a really nice section. He's going to be talking now all about the jivan mukta. First, he wants to give an example about. We're still moving and we're starting to talk about the jnani. when we get to verse 135, it'll be, he'll then state the second line. But let's go to 133. These two will talk more about the Jivamukta. Giving him some examples. Jnani-no, jnani-nas-chatra. Same-prarabdha-karmani. Same-prarabdha-karmani. Na-klesho-jnani-no-dharayat. Na-klesho-jnani-no-dharayat. Mudak-klesyat-chadharayataha. Mudak-klesyat-chadharayataha. Jnaninaha ajnaninaha cha atra same prarabdha karmani na kleshaha jnaninaha dharayat mudaha klishyati adharayataha. He says here, atra, here in the world, the jnani, the one who has knowledge, and the ajnani, both of them, the jnani and the ajnani, for both of them, the prarabdha karma is the same, in the sense that whether you are jnani, you have prarabdha karma, ajnani, you have prarabdha karma. So both jnani and ajnani, the one who has knowledge, the one who is self-ignorant, both of you are bound by this prarabdha karma that takes you through the life. For that, that's the same for both. It's not that you gain knowledge and now you don't have any prarabdha karma. So you both are on this, the path of your karma. He says, Nikleshaha jnaninaha dharayat. For the jnani, this isn't a problem. Nikleshaha, there's no pain around this. Klesha is pain and hurt and agitation. For the jnani, there's no pain about this. There's no pain around this. Dharayat, because of their own courage. Dharayat, we'll talk about that in a moment. Dharaya means courage, strength, steadiness. They have courage. We'll see why. Okay, for the jnani, there's no pain around this. That jnani is both have, jnani and ajnani both have the prarabdha, it's the same. But for the jnani, there's no klesha, there's no anxiety or pain or hurt around this. He says, but the mudaha, the one who's still deluded, klishyati dharayataha, for that person there's agitation and suffering. For the ajnani, as the prarabdha unfolds, there's a lot of agitation and suffering. Because adharyataha, for them there is no courage, there is no strength or steadiness. Why? Because they don't know who they are. And there is nothing in this creation to give strength or steadiness. In this sense, the body itself is subject to birth and death. The mind is subject to constant change, right? There's nothing what you have in your in the prarabdha, the unfoldment of the prarabdha, is subject to beginnings and ends, birth and death. So there's nothing in this prarabdha that gives you the composure that the jnani has. Why does the jnani have composure? Steadiness. Because of the nature of the Atma, has no Kartritvam or Bhoktritvam. For the Atma, there's no doership and there's no Bhoktritvam, there's no enjoyership. By that I mean, to understand exactly what they mean by no enjoyership, for the Atma, when I fulfill a desire, right, when I reap the fruits of my action, right, the Atma, the self, does not become happy or sad. Say if I fulfill a desire. For the samsari, for the ajnani, I will become happy if I fulfill a desire. On the other hand, if the desire is thwarted, I become unhappy. Because for my mind as an ajnani, my ananda has been superimposed onto the object of desire. And when that object of desire is fulfilled, at that moment my mind becomes desireless and I become happy. Because my mind is quiet. That's why I'm happy. But I don't know that. All I know as an ajnani is that that object which I want is going to make me happy, and therefore I need to get it. There's just in that thought, there is so much stress. There's so much stress just in that thought. And then I have to work to get it, and then if I'm lucky enough to fulfill the desire, then I do have a moment of happiness. I have a moment of joy. And that's stressful too, because now I have to protect the joy, right? I have to protect the situation that's making me happy. So this is the adharya. This is the lack of nishta, or the lack of strength, because there is no steadiness with which to rely on. That's the samsari's condition. So as the prarabdha, right, the prarabdha which is unfolding, if we look at it according to the shastra, the prarabdha that's unfolding is going to give you both happy and unhappy events. That means that my life is going to be stressful. Now, why wouldn't it be stressful? To not be stressful, I have to be able to say that I am perfectly content to have unhappy situations that make me unhappy. I am happy to be unhappy. And we can't say I'm happy to be unhappy, right? Because the nature of your own being is ananda. And so if you've superimposed your being upon a mind which is unhappy, now you are taking yourself to be something that you're not. And that's a very uncomfortable position, right? So it's a lie, in fact, to say I'm happy being unhappy. I'm only happy being happy. I'm only happy being whole. I'm not happy being unhappy. I'm happy being unhappy when I know that I'm not unhappy in spite of the unhappiness. Right? That's freedom. That's moksha. I am happy. I am whole. I am complete in spite of the difficult situation. I am whole and complete in spite of the unhappy situation. I am whole and complete in spite of this hideous disagreement that I'm having with my partner. I am still whole and complete. This is huge to be able to say that. And you will be so pleased that you are full and complete in spite of samsara. That's what you're saying. But Ajnani can't say that. Ajnani can't say that. Because what makes you an Ajnani is not recognizing the changelessness of that wholeness. That's what makes you an Ajnani. If you recognize the changelessness of that wholeness, you would recognize Aham Brahmasmi, I am whole and complete. And nothing can take that away from me. The Jnani doesn't have that. That is the lack of dharyam. That steadiness can simply not be there because of the superimposition onto the mind that is subject to the world for the quality of its vrittis, right? The quality of its emotions is something that's given to me by the world. There is no dharyam in that, right? There's no steadiness. There's no nishta. There's nothing to rely on when that's the condition. The jnani is the opposite. There is nothing but steadiness. I am steadiness personified. But because the atma is changeless. It's not that I'm trying to be steady. That's another huge problem. I'm trying to be steady. I'm trying to be steady. No. The Atma is steady. That is, it's non-dual. It's changeless. And so it's just waking up to recognizing the reality of your being. That being is steady. And so for that person, there is no, the prarabdha is not a pain, because I'm not asking the prarabdha to be other than what it is. I'm not dependent on the prarabdha for my wholeness. And I'm not asking, as we'll see in this next verse, I'm also not asking the prarabdha or asking Ishvara to be just one giant sukha-vritti. You know, like asking Ishvara, there should be, Bhagavan, there should be no pain in this world. My life at least. My life at least should only be one of happiness and joy. We don't ask the Ishvara to be like that because Ishvara is not like that. You don't ask the creation to be what it isn't. You know, as though there's not such a thing as continual change, as there's not such a thing as disease, as birth and death. Just the fact that there's birth and death is enough. That's enough. And on top of that, there's all kinds of other things. Right? And so to say, Bhagavan, you just change the way things are. Let us go to Swargaloka. In fact, in Swargaloka, the highest heaven world, it is like that. Everything is fine. There is no birth and death as long as you're there. The time that you're there is limited over a long period of time, though. But while you're there, there's no old age, there's no birth or death, there's no illness, there's no hunger or thirst. When you have hunger, you have the food to eat. When you have thirst, you have something to drink. When you have a desire, the desire is fulfilled. And so it's the perfect samsara. But it's time-bound also. But anyway, that heaven experience is there. And the hell experience is there also. That also is time-bound. So time-bound, you can say, well, let me go to Swarga, but then the Swarga is fine until, you know, your time's almost up. Right? Then the Swarga is going to come to an end. So like that, that's the nature of the creation, something that is by its very nature, pain is included as part of the creation. And so, and Jnani doesn't ask, you know, that the nature of the creation be other than what it is. The freedom is not in that. The freedom is in the fact that my being is not subject to any of that. My body is, my mind is, the sense organs are, the world is. But I am not. That is the nature, that's the adhishtana. The adhishtana is not subject to the vagaries of the nitya. And so that strength of my being gives this dharyam, for as long as I'm alive, living out the prarabdha karma, to handle this as it is, to be with this as it is, and to cope with the ups and downs, and the joys and sorrows, and the pain that the body can give, and the pain that the life itself can give. So he gives an example of that, beautiful example in this next verse, how that is.
Marge gantro dvayo shvanta. Marge gantro dvayo shvanta. Samayam apyaduratam. Samayam apyaduratam. Janan dharyat ritam gachet. Janan dharyat ritam gachet. Anyas tishtati dinat dinadihi. Anyas tishtati dinat dinadihi. Marge gantroho dvayoho shrantau samayam api aduratam janan daryat drutam gachet anyaha tishtati dinadihi.
Gives this example. He says there are two travelers. Both, two travelers. Gunther is a traveler. So Marge, on a path, there are two travelers, two people going along on a path. Shrantau Samayam. So it says, when for these two travelers, when both are equally tired. Samayam, Shranti means tired, fatigued. When the fatigue is the same, like they've been traveling on this two people, they've been traveling on the path for a long time, going somewhere. They're both tired. Their tiredness is the same. Okay. But, he says, oh, even though the tiredness for these two travelers is the same, even though, he says, for one of them, who knows that there's not much farther to go, aduratam. One person knows there's not very much farther to go, we're almost there. One of the travelers knows this. That person, drutam gachet, keeps walking quickly, moves along swiftly. They're both tired. They don't know each other. Both tired, because otherwise this one guy would say, don't worry, it's not too far. But this one guy, you know, person knows that on almost to the destination. He's tired. But so he knows he's almost there, so he just keeps going quickly, walking quickly, no problem. And he has a lot of dhairyam, kind of courage, and he's just willing to push it a little farther, no problem. So he just goes, okay? The other guy, the anyaha, the other one, tishtati, he just stands there. He stands there dejected, dinadihi. His mind is collapsed. Yeah. He's had it. Right? The other one, the other one's had it. He just can't go any farther. Yeah. Why? Because he doesn't know, right, that the destination is close by. He has no idea. He's exhausted, and he just has had it. Tishtati, he just simply stands there, dina dihi. His mind has just become despondent and weak. So that's his example. I think it's a really good example. There's different ways to take this example. This is one way. Jnani or Ajnani? Samsara is hard. There is birth and death. There is disease. You know? There is poverty and events that happen in your life that are very difficult for Jnani or Ajnani. That it's not that the person gains knowledge and the difficulties that samsara has to give. I mean just objective difficulties. I'm not even talking about your emotional reactions. Now that's viparita bhavana. That's another thing. Forget about even, say you have jnana nishtha, no viparita bhavana, no problem. You're abiding in your own wholeness. Samsara still has plenty of things to give you to cause pain. You know? Physical pain, natural disasters, loss of loved ones. It's endless. Disease. There's all kinds of hardships that are endured as long as you are here and you're living out this life. For jnani or ajnani. But the jnani, it has so many things going for you. Because, first of all, in spite of the unfoldment of the difficulties of the prarabdha or the difficulties of life, right? In spite of that, your being is free. In the midst of it, you remain untouched. Even in the midst of physical illness, which is not fun. You're jnani or ajnani, hurt yourself, something happens to you, that's painful. It's not that the jnani, you know, is immune to physical pain, you know, or immune to starvation, or immune to all of the things that can happen. No, they're all experienced. But for the jnani, this prarabdha will work its way out, and at the end I'll be gone. I'll just be Ishwara. This prarabdha will come to an end. That's just one way. Okay, I'm just saying that one. And it's also true. For the ajnani, there is no end in sight. That's just on a worldly. On another level, you know, on another level, I am what I seek. Right? So that in that sense, the end is near. There is no distance between myself and what I seek. And that's for the jnani. For the ajnani, there's a great distance between myself and what I seek. For the jnani, in fact, it says adhuratam. There is no distance between myself and what I seek. And so even though I can be tired and I'm on this path, the path of my prarabdha, for me there's no distance between myself and what I seek. For the jnani, there's a great distance between myself and what I seek. And it can be very, very discouraging because even when I fulfill the desires that I'm going after, when I fulfill the desire, what happens? Which is exhausting. I fulfill the desire and I have my moment of ananda, but what happens is another desire rises. And that one gets pushed to the side. And so for that, the ajnani becomes exhausted. The jnani moves on with energy because there is no distance between myself and what I seek. It's another way of looking at it. But I think that this, the way that I said also is what Vidyaranya is talking about here also. He has other verses. He has another verse that's in harmony with this one, where the student asks the teacher, more or less something like this. Now that I'm gaining knowledge, you know, it's kind of like now that I'm gaining knowledge, will all this prarabdha come to an end? All these hardships come to an end, you know, because I'm gaining the knowledge after all. The hardships of all of this prarabdha, that should stop, right? Right? And the teacher goes, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You already made that mistake. You should have got knowledge last life. But this is already fructifying, so it's not going to come to an end. You have to live it out. So that's the verse. And so this is somehow kind of going along with that verse, right? You have, once the prarabdha starts, you have to live this out and go through all of the sukha and dukkha and all of the hardship that life has to give you, you know. And life does give a lot of challenges. And for a jnani, it's okay. It doesn't make any smitya, you know. And when this life is over, I'll just abide as Ishwara and let me just appreciate this life that I have. You know? And there's no distance between, and then there's no distance between the seeker and the sought. So, okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
I forgot the two little sections we're covering. You know, the first verse. What were the two elements? Is that simple?
Yeah, the first. I'll just say it real quick. Yeah. In the very first verse.
Of
this chapter, the whole. It's Atmanam Chet Vijani Yat Ayamasmi Iti Purusha. That's the first line. And it says, Atmanam Chet Vijani Yat, if one should have Aparoksha Jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge of this self, of the Atma, of this self, as Ayam Asmi, I am this, and I am this Brahman, this Purusha. So if a person should have direct immediate knowledge of the self as I am this, meaning I am the Atma, right? Then, so that's the whole, okay. Has been on that. Now it's going into the rest of the chapter is going to be on this. Kim ichan kasya kamaya shariram anisanturate. If the person should have that knowledge, then desiring what? And for whose benefit one gets flustered and upset around the body. In other words, what this body is doing, what the body is achieving, how this body means the whole body-mind complex. Desiring what and for whose benefit do we get ourselves feverish? Jwara means, actually, jwara means fever. You know? So this is anu sanjwara. Sanjwara means, you know, really getting flustered, feverish, upset, agitated, following about something. So anusanjwara. Why would that person who knows, I am the Atma, which is the Purusha, I'm the Atma, which is Brahman, I am this Atma, which is Brahman, then what would cause, why would that person, desiring what, and for the benefit of whom, would that person get so flustered over the doings of this, of the jiva, of the body-mind sense organs? So now, they're going to talk a lot about why that person would not get flustered, yeah, would not get so agitated.
Well, this would be the habitual mistake.
Well, we've gone through that, Edna. We've gone through the viparita bhavana. And so now, the viparita bhavana is not there anymore.
Oh.
So now,
then where would it have been? Now I'm confused.
Because it says, for the, because it, now it's for the person who has that knowledge, for the jnani.
Yeah, without the habitual mistakes.
Yeah, because he's spent the first half trying to get rid of even the viparita bhavana and tell you that whole unfoldment.
Okay.
So now say you recognize yourself, then recognizing yourself, your own swarupa, the ananda of your own being, then desiring what and for whose sake are you getting upset about the what the body is going through? What the body is going through means I am a jiva here within this creation, walking around in this creation. I want it to be this way, I want it to be that way. This isn't happening for me, I'm upset. That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I getting upset? What is the cause for that upset if I know the satyam mitya and if I know my own being? So.
Isn't it?
It doesn't mean that we don't try to make things better in the world. Because that world, your prarabdha calls upon you to help. Right? That's dharma. As the world, your life unfolds, you have certain duties, and you're called upon to help in different ways. You know, to help alleviate suffering. Just like you're called upon, and everybody takes this absolutely for granted, you're called upon to alleviate the suffering of your own body. Right? If you cut yourself, you put something on it, a nice little band-aid and whatnot. You know, you do whatever you can to relieve the suffering of your body. You do what you can to relieve the suffering of your mind. We're called upon to do that. It's absolutely natural. We're also called upon, it's absolutely natural to do that for everything within our surrounding. If you're not upset, if you're angry or upset or something, that kind of can trump that. But when you're just feeling normal, when you're feeling like yourself, then if something needs repair or someone is hurt or something is suffering, you naturally do what you can to help the situation. Right? So don't equate not being upset with being not caring or being blasé. It's not that. It's that I can be objective and really want to help whatever is being called upon in the situation that I find myself in. But I don't have to be upset, right, or distraught, you know, or fever and work myself up into a fever. I can just do naturally what is natural. And what is natural is to help. We know that in terms of our own body and mind. It's all natural to try to make it better for ourselves, but it's as natural to make it better for the whole when something's not working as an obstruction there, you know, my own anger, desires, or things that confuse all of that.
Isn't it natural for the mind, as long as the mind, that there is going to be desires? But it's also, we're talking about being detached from.
You, as long as you have a mind, you'll have desires, but it's there's two kinds of desires. One is, I want this so that I can be happy. That's the Ajnani desire. But the Jnani desire is, I want this, and if I don't get it, I'm fine also.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So the prarabdha karma itself includes desires. It's not like the, what about if you want a drink of water, you say, oh, no. So it's not that. It's that my ananda is not dependent upon the fulfillment of the desire. So I have an objectivity of freedom there. Doesn't mean that I don't go after the thing, because that's what's natural and obvious in the situation. We want things all of the time. We want to eat and, you know, do we want to do what we do. But it's so much different than when you are responding, fulfilling your desires out of wholeness, out of being complete. I fulfill my desires rather than fulfilling my desires to be complete. Out of wholeness, I fulfill my desires. I don't fulfill my desires to become whole. That's a totally different reality. The one is naturally has dairim, right? Because nothing, the dairim is in a way, it's kind of false in a way, because I have dairim, that type of courage or steadiness, because I am that. So it's not an accomplishment. It's my nature, that dairim is my nature. Where for an ajnani, that nature has not been realized.
A question, you were talking about avarna and vikshepa the other day.
Avarna and vikshepa.
Yeah, and how one is like for Ishvara, it's kind of.
What we say is ajnanam. Ajnanam has two capacities. Ajnanam means ignorance. Two capacities. Just even relative ajnana. One is that it covers the vastu, it covers what is actually there, and that's called avarana. That which covers is avarana. And the vikshepa is it projects something upon that. Right? So it's that twofold. It stops you from seeing what is there, actually there, and then it projects something else, like rope snake is a perfect example of that. Avarana and vikshepa, the rope, the ajnanam covers the rope, so you don't see the rope as rope, and you mistake the rope for something else. So there's covering and projection. And so we say, what is maya for Ishvara is ajnanam for the jiva. Because for Ishvara, the maya upadi is just vikshepa, it's a projection. It's manifest knowledge. There is no avarna there, because there's no ignorance. The maya upadhi for Ishvara, there's no ignorance at all, because it's the total manifestation of infinite knowledge. So where's any ignorance? But when that manifestation of infinite knowledge is there, which is the form of this creation, for all of the jivas within the creation, there is a twofold. Each jiva has a twofold. If each jiva has a jnanam, and that ajnanam has the twofold capacity. It covers, right, the swarupa, it covers the atma, and it causes the mind to take the atma for other than what it is. So there's the covering, I don't know myself, and then I am the mind-body sense organs complex. So for the jiva, there's both the avarana, where I don't know the atma, I don't know myself, and I mistake myself to be something else. Right? So not knowing and mistaking. Whereas for Ishvara, there's just the maya upadhi, which is this vikshepa. Right? So the avarna aspect is not there. The ajnanam aspect is not there for Ishvara. Just the projection is there. But the ajnanam is there for the jiva, because the jiva is limited. Limited knowledge, limited mind, limited sense organs, limited body. And so even though the jiva enjoys, that has the same atma, which is the atma of the total manifestation, that one atma is the very Atma of every individual within that manifestation. Each individual, because of a limited upadhi, has a jnana, right? Whereas for Ishwara, there won't be any. There won't be any covering. So we don't call the Maya upadhi a jnana. Or even though it's the same upadhi, but if I'm identified with the whole, manifestation of the whole, there is no covering.
Well, can we ever do a projection without the ignorance?
Yeah, you can in what we call from a limited standpoint. That's why I use the example of if imagination, like you can have an imagination. Or you can do an upasana. You know, you can have a living, vivid imagination. But you know that you are the self of that imagination. You are the Ishwara of that imagination. A lucid dream is not, regular dream isn't like that because the ajnanam is there. You're lost in the dream.
Yeah.
But lucid dream, you know it's a dream. You're the self of the dream. You have what we call the manifest knowledge. You are, the dream is just manifest knowledge, which is your manifest knowledge. And there's no part of it that you're not, and you're not identified with anything within it. Right? That's the only identification, that's not quite the right word, but is just with the sattva, which pervades the whole thing. Right? So you are, the whole is known to you. So that's, of course, that's not being Ishwara, but it's being your little version of Ishwara.
It gives you the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why the dream and the dream drishtanta illustration, lucid dream, imagination, all of these things are so important because they give you, they're just a nice little example that you can then extend to understand what we mean by Ishwara. You know? Because you can even, say if you look even in the dream from the waking standpoint, you realize that I am the whole. That dream is me, the whole thing. But I don't change to become the dream. Right? I'm the very self of the dream. I'm the truth of the dream. But I don't change to become the dream. That's why the dream comes. It comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. I remain the same. I'm not born, nor do I die. When a dream character is born or dies, I don't come into being or go out of being when the creation comes in, dream creation comes into being or goes out of being. Nothing happens to me at all. And yet, I am the very truth of that dream. I'm the existence that it enjoys, I'm the consciousness that it enjoys, I am the self of it. And so I'm not only the self of the dream, I'm the self of everyone in the dream. Everybody in the dream says, I am, I am, I am, I am, I exist, I exist, I exist, I exist. They're just all, the only one existent conscious being there is the self from which the whole thing has come. So there's only one me. But all, every part of the dream is enjoying that one me. And when that whole dream goes away and all the characters are gone, what is left? That one me. That which is the truth of all of them. And so that one me is the satyam, is the truth of Ishwara, is it the truth of everything within Ishwara? The truth of Ishwara, it's the truth of every jiva that is really not anything separate from Ishwara. Like all of us sitting in this room, we're not separate from the whole. Every single, my body, my mind, my sense organs, my ahankara, my moods, my emotions, my ajnanam, my knowledge, absolutely everything is part and parcel of this whole manifestation. It's part of a much greater story. And then there is the self, me. Now, does this me belong to the jivas, each jiva within the imagination or within the manifest creation? Or is the self from which the manifest creation has come and every jiva within it enjoys, has for itself that one self? And that's the vision. I am the self of this whole. And that's, I mean, you have to understand a lot. The mind has to understand a lot to understand that. Because we're born into this creation as a body, mind, sense, organs. And from my drishti, from my viewpoint, I am this living in this creation. And so the mind has to understand, to see, not just, it's not just memorize or believe. It has to get, understand. It has to see it. And so there's a lot of unfoldment that has to take place to be able to see that, all of the aspects, you know, of it, why that is true. And why it can't be another way. You know, mind has to understand. And when it says, oh, well, why can't it be like that? Why couldn't it be like this? That's what we call a doubt. That doubt is very important. The whole process of is, because knowledge has so much to do with removing doubt, or with answering, another way of saying that is answering questions. Like say, you understand this, but then what about that? Well, right, that has to be understood. And you understand that? Well, yeah, but then what about that? Yeah, right, that has to be understood. A lot of that just takes place naturally in the unfoldment, in the teaching methodology itself. Often you'll have the experience of the teacher is teaching, and a doubt comes up to your mind, in your mind, and oh my gosh, that's what she, then she talks about that. Then a doubt comes, oh, she talks about that. That's not because I'm talking about that or because Swamiji's talking about. It's because that's a natural, your mind is following the natural unfoldment of, yeah, but if this is so, then what about that? And that Sampradaya, the teaching tradition, is going along that path. If this is so, then this would be 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 so. And so your mind is, can get in that groove, and so as the question comes up often in the class, that's what will be talked about next, because you're, what we're talking about will generate that question. You see what I mean? So.
Well, the desire coming from the from already fullness. Well, why would somebody want to fill a desire if they're already full?
Well, it's just because it's natural to fulfill it. Like, it's, you're not fulfilling it so that you can become happy. But if the desire is there, it's just because that's what you're meant to do in your prarabdha. Say if there's not ajnanam pushing you, then it's the living out of your prarabdha. So what they say is that the prarabdha has to manifest. Something has to pull you to make you do something. So it can either, you can be pulled into some situation by another person. It's called anyecha. The desire of another person will pull you into the situation. Or it can be anicca. Nobody is pulling you into it. Nobody's desiring that for you. The creation sets it up. It's not being done by person. And the third one is swecha. Swaicha. It comes from your own buddhi as a desire. So these are the three ways that a person is pulled into one event after another, because if there's no desire, you won't move. So the desire also is part of the prarabdha.
And then what I could do with the other one is, it's like, if I would move from a desire to fulfill myself, I could use that as a means of
prasada buddhi.
Yeah.
Everything is prasada. You think of that, everything is prasada buddhi, because everything that you do, the results of everything that you do, you see as Ishwara. That's the prasada buddhi. Right, the results of all of your actions you accept as coming from Ishwara.
Yeah, but I would think that, like, if you come from an already from a ready fullness with a desire, there will be less suffering in it than coming from a desire.
Oh, I see. So prasada means, yeah, but if you're coming from a place of fullness, that is exactly the situation of a jnani. The desire is there, but if the desire is there and it's coming out from a place of fullness, right, then that's a burnt seed. That desire doesn't have any hold on you then. because you're already full. Or am I missing what you said? Am I missing something there?
No, I think it's as clear as I can get right now.
Carol, does the teaching talk about karma for the sampradaya?
What do you mean?
Like we all have individual karmas about like how our lives were defined over our. And I'm just wondering if there's anything in the Vedas about what happens to the teaching in this creation.
Oh, they do. If they do have something, they say that even all the way through Kali Yuga, that this teaching will always maintain itself. It will never die. Even when there will always be that sampradaya, that parampara will continue all the way through the creation. Even though at times, like in Kali Yuga, there are not going to be very many takers. Not very many people interested, you know, because they're interested in other things. But there will always be mumukshus. And they also say that in the Kali Yuga, the means for antakarana shuddhi are much simpler, much easier. Just, you know, chanting hard that Hari Rama, doing some simple chants and prayers. Bhagavan says, oh, good. You're doing well. They say we're about a quarter into Kali Yuga. That's debatable. Most people believe that we're in the first part of Kali Yuga now.
Why would they say antakarana shuddhi would be easier in all this chaos?
No, I mean what you need for the type of tapas you need to do, because we're kind of depraved as in this yoga, you know, it's harder.
You get a lot of punya for granted.
Oh my God, she's thinking of me.
let me bless that person.
Carol, earlier you made a differentiation between the sankalpa and the prarabdha karma, and I'm just wondering, how is the sankalpa?
Oh, well, there how I was using it. That's because I was saying, using sankalpa is slightly different. In terms of a person's own will, mm-hmm. You know? I'd say so, because sankalpa is used in a different way also. So say if the strength of the prarabdha is unfolding, but you have a desire for something. Now, if that desire is in harmony with the prarabdha, then the example is used, it's like swimming downstream. You know, when you're, you know, in a river and you're swimming downstream, everything, you know, it's like walking on one of those belts in the, you know, in the airport. You know, you're just moving along, you're swimming downstream, everything's
so
just
cool.
Going for you, you know. So when your desire is in harmony with your prarabdha, everything is just going your way. When the desire is not in harmony with the prarabdha, it's like swimming upstream. It's like no matter what, it doesn't allow it to happen. You want it, but it's not going to happen. Right?
And I guess that differentiation is there because there is free will. I mean, if there was no free will, then the sankalpa would just be the prarabdha karma.
That's right. That's exactly right. And then the free will, see, with ajnana, with ignorance, we look around. We're trying to become happy. We're trying to get our... make the creation, make our situation such that we'll be happy.
Yeah.
And then we look at this person over here, gee, they seem to be happy with what they're doing. Maybe I should do that. So I lose my own center. I lose who I am, even as a jiva, because I'm looking around at whatever everybody else is doing. And, of course, I'm not happy as I am because I don't have knowledge. And I'm just taking myself to be this limited person who's looking out here for happiness. Right? So now that means I'm unhappy because I'm looking out here for happiness. And then I look all around me and see what they're doing and what they're doing and what they're doing. And so I will develop desires, pick up desires along the way that have nothing to do with my prarabdha. And then that's very painful. But with a jnani, those those extraneous desires just simply aren't there because they're not coming out of me. They're not swecha, right? They're not coming out of my prarabdha. They don't belong to me. They're not coming outside. So the desires that are coming out of me are my own prarabdha. And so actually I am in harmony with my... I'm in harmony with my prarabdha because whatever sankalpa I have is a result of the prarabdha. Right? It's not something that I picked up from the Joneses over here. So that makes life much easier. And because you just live in your life, you don't have all of this other stuff, all these other people's lives, you know, superimposed on you, making you think I should do this or I should be like that, or only if I could be like that, then I would be happy. That's also painful. It's messy. Very, very messy. It's wonderful to be a jnani. You know, because you get to be you. Who you are, and you get to be you living your life.
Yeah. And the karma then defines you. You don't have to be self-defined.
That's right. You are self-defined by you. By your life.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is exactly who you are and what you're meant to be doing, and you do your best with it. Rather than worrying about trying to be somebody else, which you don't even know that you're doing that. You don't know that that's a problem. All of this stuff has to all drop off.
Yeah.
But none of that makes any sense either unless you know that you're whole. Unless the mind feels whole and complete, discovered that, then all of these things don't work anyway. You're still not happy because you're trying to make your prarabdha make you happy. Your prarabdha is not going to make you happy either.
Yeah.
It's just that for a vijnani, what's the great thing is the prarabdha is already here. It is here. You don't have to do anything about it. You know, you have your place. You belong here. You have a place. Or you wouldn't be here.
Really?
Yeah.
Then we should really all feel at home.
That's right. You should feel completely at home. But what does it, why you don't feel at home, is just because of the self-ignorance. That's why. When the self-ignorance is gone, then yeah, you are you and you are at home. And you know yourself. Yeah. You wouldn't even feel at home if you didn't know yourself. You have to know yourself. And then this having this upadhi, who you are, that's who you are. It's what it is. And that's who you're supposed to be, and you belong here. You're part of Ishwara. That's a huge thing. You are part of Ishwara. At the upadhi. So you can't say you don't belong or that you're, you know, a reject or something. And then Ishwara is a reject.
Well, there's friction between saying I am the body and I am Ishwara.
The body is part of Ishwara. So, you know, it's like, what if you say, well, my hand says, you know, I'm the hand, I'm not Ishwara. I'm the hand, I'm not the body. The body says, no, you are the body.
Yeah, well, there's an emotional friction there, or I'm not sure how to pinpoint.
Well,
where
that's
the
victory. That's the victory to bhavana.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why that all has to be worked out. We're done.
What a great Sunday.